Hey there, and welcome to Sister Catherine's podcast. Hi, I'm Sister Catherine Herms, author of the best-selling book, Surviving Depression, A Catholic Approach. In this podcast series, Jeanette and I are sharing conversations about my newest book, Reclaim Regret, How God Heals Life's Disappointments. Thank you for joining us today as we talk about the regrets we all carry in our hearts and the deep soul healing that can be ours.
Hi, this is Jeanette de Beauvoir, and this is podcast number 3 in the Reclaim Regret series. Reclaim Regret is the title of a new book by Catherine J. Hermes, Sister Catherine J. Hermes, I should say, and she's here to talk some more about it. Thanks for coming by, Sister.
It's a pleasure.
So we've talked so far about this sense of people having regrets and thinking that they destroy themselves with them or their relationship with God, and how God can take those pieces, those shattered bits, and rebuild them. And we've talked some about this whole sense of people reacting to their feelings rather than being with their feelings. And then at the end of the last podcast, we talked some about finding resources and examples in Scripture. And I wondered if we could just start with that this week, because I know that one of the prominent figures in Scripture is someone that we really can learn a lot from. And I'm going to let you take it from there, because I think you know exactly who I'm talking about.
I think you're talking about Moses.
I think I'm talking about Moses, yes.
I love Moses. Moses is such a complex figure, and I like to think about him in relation to regrets, because in a way, God set it up so perfect. You know, when the firstborn male children were being killed by Pharaoh, he was saved. His mother was so smart, you know, put him in a basket, put him on the river.
Get him safe.
He was picked up by no one less than the daughter of the Pharaoh, who really loved him, thought he was so cute. He was raised in Pharaoh's palace, almost like a son of the Pharaoh. Everything was set up so great. I kind of wonder sometimes, like, what really, did God have plan A?
Right, exactly.
Because it's not true, but, you know, I wonder, was there a plan A?
Moses had it made in the shade, really, didn't he?
Yeah,
you know, everything was lined up for the perfect life.
And we never are lined up for the perfect life just for ourselves.
No.
You know, it's always, we all are born and have a mission. We all are here for other people. So it's like you wonder how, in a certain sense, was that meant to be in another way? But anyway, so Moses was, everything was all set up.
On the cusp of a brand new life,
when, you know, he went out one day and two Hebrew brothers of his were fighting, it was a Hebrew and an Egyptian, and he looked this way and that, and there was no one looking, so he killed the Egyptian and buried him in the sand, as we all know. And the next day he went out and two Hebrews were fighting. And so he asked them why they were fighting, and we all know the story. They said, well, are you going to kill us the way you killed the Egyptian? And then he realized that this was going to be found out, and so he escaped. And I wonder what it was like. For so many years, he had fled to the desert. He was taking care of the flocks of his father-in-law. They weren't his flocks. He was in the desert for many decades.
And most people would look at that life and say, oh my gosh, what a failure.
He was alone. Mm-hmm. And what was he thinking?
Right.
You know, his life had turned out so different from what he had expected, from what it seemed to have been set up to be. And that begs the question, like, is that just a part of life? You know, that we think it's going to be this way. We think God has it set up this way. We think there is
a
plan A.
Or we try to set it up this way.
Right, right. Or we think there is a plan A.
Right.
And then, too bad. Now we have to do plan B. But maybe there isn't a plan A and plan B. Maybe that's all a part of the plan. Maybe
the
plan is a salvific whole, salvific plan, a salvific drama that our life plays. on the stage of history.
Right.
Yeah. So I often think of what that must have been like for him.
Yeah, here we have him in the desert taking care of somebody else's flocks, living a life that's probably fairly minimal and miserable in some ways.
And then that moment when he sees a burning bush and he walks over to see what this is all about, and he hears a voice, you know, "Moses, Moses, take off your sandals. This is holy ground." And maybe for the first time in a long time, or maybe the first time, he heard the Lord's voice speaking to him.
Speaking to him specifically.
Yeah, and what was that like? You know, how confusing or exciting or uncertain was that for him? And the amazing thing is that God didn't say, "What in the world were you thinking?"
Which is what any other person would say to him, right?
Exactly. What was that all about? Please. I had it all set up for you.
Mm-hmm.
He did not say a word about what Moses had done. Not a word. And I think the first day I realized this, I went through the scriptures and I started looking at all the major characters that we look at. And it's kind of God's pattern. He doesn't look back. He doesn't have something to say about what they did. But he said, I've been seeing the misery of my people, and I want to come and save them. And guess what? I've chosen you. So the whole beautiful thing, how God doesn't necessarily look to our past. He never rubs people's nose in the ground of what they've done. But he picks them up and he says, "I have a mission for you. You fit into the whole drama of salvation. You are an actor that has a place, and I'm calling you to that place."
I want to get back to Moses, but I also want to say that one of the subtitles for Reclaim Regret is "You See Your Failure, God Sees Your Future." And that's exactly what you're talking about, that the first thing probably on Moses' mind was, "Oh my gosh, I really have screwed up here." And that's not the first thing on God's mind. God says, "Here's what I want you to do."
Mm-hmm. And when I think of my regrets, I think even some regrets that are still lingering there, and I have to work through them. And in them, I'll find God in a new way. But at the same time, my life is called forward and my life is being used by God. So it's like a both and.
Right.
That this healing process is just very gradually and gently. God lets us work through our past as he uses us for the future.
Future.
Mm-hmm. Very powerful.
So let's get back to Moses.
So Moses had to... It wasn't like God said, "Well, let's cut the ties here and let's start a new show. Let's start something different." He said, "No, I need you to go back to Pharaoh and back to Egypt and back to the community of the Hebrews in Egypt."
Which must have been very awkward at the least. At the very least, it must have been awkward for him to go
to
back.
Show up after how many years?
Right.
Let's say, I have this whole big plan now.
Right.
And he had to go back. And I was always impressed by that when you think of regrets, because we have to go back. There are still regrets that I want to work through more deeply. I have to go back to them. I may have worked through them somewhat, but I still need to go back to them. And in order for them to be healed and in order to really go forward in peace. And I think Moses is just such a wonderful example of that.
Right, right. And you're also in this story and in what you're saying now, you're talking a whole lot about reconnecting with the past, reconnecting with people, reconnecting with God.
Mm-hmm.
How does that come about?
So we're not going back to Egypt. And there are many times that we have had regrets and we can't physically go back to a state or to a house or to a relationship or to a person, to a former place where we worked. We can't always go back to our Egypts, mm-hmm. like Moses did. So what does that going back look like in the process of healing? And for me, that reconnecting with our Egypt, that reconnecting with the past, has everything to do with presence. As we were speaking last time, the sense of presence, everybody talks about being present.
Being present in the moment. Right.
What does that mean? You know, being present to ourselves, you know, what does that mean? And for me, and in the process of healing that comes into the book Reclaim Regret, it's very specific and very simple. It's being present to ourselves on every level of our being, because events, memories, conversations, triggers, problems, regrets, all these things kind of reverberate on every level of our being. So we can almost feel them reverberating, in a sense, in our psychological states, in right. our afflictive emotions, in our thought patterns, in our defenses, and all of these things kind of work together, and we experience them bouncing around, in a sense, within us. In a sense, we can't get our hands on them, but we know that something's not right, mm-hmm. and something's, it feels so complex and so confusing. And you know, I can imagine Moses going like, what do I need to do now? You know, exactly how is this going to happen? And the very simple thing is he really just had to start walking back toward Egypt. It was a pretty simple thing. And the same thing for us. We need to walk back to ourselves. We need to come home to every level of our being, to how our life is experienced within ourselves. So sometimes I tell people just very simply, you know, take out a piece of scrap paper sometimes and just draw a little stick figure and just start putting little X's on, you know, the parts of your body where you're feeling tension. And, you know, my
knees, physically.
Physically, my knees will lock. My stomach will be really tense. Some people, their shoulders are really high or they have a headache, and their arms, they feel pain all down their arms, and they've never felt it before. But the point is, they're feeling it all the time. And we're not home enough to notice. And actually touching just the physical way we're carrying all this afflictive emotional pain inside of ourselves allows it to become very concrete. It simplifies it, in a sense. Mm-hmm. So presence, in a sense, is like coming home to ourselves.
Right.
Physically, mentally, you know, psychologically, spiritually. Who am I? What is happening? Where am I? And holding that for like 5 minutes, you know, not for 3 hours, but just holding that experience for like 5 minutes, being present to it. And then saying, okay, Lord, here it is, picking it up, handing it to him, and saying, I give it all to you. I wash my hands of it for today, and going on with our life. And every day, you know, we can do this with our experiences and hold how we're carrying them, how they're affecting us, and really be present to them. Because the more we're present to them, the deeper we can become. And the deeper we go, we discover God's presence within us. But the other thing is, presence integrates.
I was going to ask what connection this had to integration, because it seems to me that you can't just say, okay, I'm going to give it over to God forever and never deal with it again. It's
right.
It's got to come back into.
And I think people of faith, you know, many times we think, okay, I'm going to take this divorce. I'm going to take this back that I wasn't with my mom when she died, or that my child has left the faith, or whatever it is, that I didn't do this. I didn't catch this in my child's upbringing, whatever it is. I'm going to take that and I'm going to give it to God and it's going to all be okay. But it doesn't work that way,
no.
You know, because we're human beings, we're embodied people, and our whole spirituality lives out within us. We're incarnational. Simply by being present, it begins to integrate all that emotional disturbance, you can call it emotional disruption, and little by little, it kind of dissipates on its own. And, you know, we've gone back to our Egypt, to our regrets, and the power they had over us dissipates. Part of that dissipation, too, is that, this is another principle, what is unconscious is very powerful. You know, so we consciously know I really didn't have a lot to play. I didn't have much of a choice in situation X or Y or Z. But it still is bothering me a lot. Because what is unconscious is more powerful than what is conscious. So by bringing to conscious awareness, you know, what's hanging around in the corners of our awareness that we're afraid we'll find out, or others will find out, that we just sit with it very gently, very, very peacefully for short amounts of time, and then handing it over to Jesus and saying, okay, it's yours now. It's yours to take care of. It loses its power over us.
Because it's become conscious.
And the beautiful thing about that is if you make that a practice, it's a wonderful way even to end your day every night. You know, what is it during this day that bugged me, bothered me, disturbed me, but I didn't have a chance right then, you know?
To sort it out.
You know, We're all adults. We have to hold down a job, whatever it is, our teenagers yelling at us or whatever it is. We can't deal with our own issues.
Mm-hmm.
Because we have to get through life. You have to be professional, whatever it may be. We have to take care of someone else and their situation. In the evening, we can sit back and say, okay, what happened today that I've still not settled?
Right. Where do I feel uneasy?
Yes.
Or where is there a shadow feeling there?
And we're not looking at moral issues, whether I'm right or wrong or bad or
just
good.
Just how I feel.
But what's reverberating within me that I'm not paying attention to?
That's excellent.
And then beginning to see that, to allow it to come forth, to almost, there's so many ways you can pray with it. You know, I often say a little breath prayer. I am here now in you, Jesus. You know, very simply as I hold the kind of afflictive emotional state that comes up, you know, I am here now in you. You are here now in me. And it's a very calming, peaceful way to unite yourself to God, who's united to you already, and to kind of incarnationally integrate the day and put it to rest, to heal the day piece by piece, day by day, to allow it to become aware of it. So I don't know if we've digressed from the topic a bit here, but presence integrates, being present integrates. And something you said earlier when we started, Moses, his relationship with God, as far as we can tell from the scriptures, he was saved by, you know, through his mother, but somehow the Lord inspired her, you know, to put him in a basket, that he was a child to be saved. But from what we can see from the scriptures, his real relationship with God began after his call. And so after his having to face his regrets, that, and after his having to walk back, and but what if they say this, and what if they don't follow me out, and they're screaming at me because now they don't have food.
Right.
We're all afraid because there's a lot of water here, and the Egyptians are coming, like, what are we supposed to be doing? And God is saying, do not cry out to me, raise your staff and start walking. And, you know, his whole experience of God's fidelity came through these experiences that he had to be present to,
right,
that he had to have feelings. You know, he wasn't, you know, we hear the lectors reading these readings. Mm-hmm. And so Moses said, oh, God, what should we do? And God said, lift up your staff. and Moses lifted up his staff. And then that's probably appropriate for the liturgical reading. But it's like, what are we supposed to be doing here? Or right. What do we do? You right. know, like, I'm really afraid. I brought
Fear,
all these
panic.
People out yes. here. And like, I'm stuck. I cannot solve this problem myself. And his relationship with God really begins when he realizes God has a plan. God is in charge. God knows what he's doing, and God will be faithful. And as we go back through our little regrets every day, our big regrets in life, our Egypts that we have to face, we discover as we cry out to God, God is with us, God loves us, God is faithful, and God has a plan. God has a plan that we cannot mess up. Right. We can't mess up God's plan.
Try as we might.
Try as we might.
Do.
And so our life has meaning.
Right.
Our life has meaning. No matter, as I'm saying this, I'm actually speaking to myself. Our life has meaning no matter what has happened and what we've done or haven't done. Our life has meaning. And even deeper, there are sins we've committed, sins of omission, sins of commission. It's part of being a human, of being vulnerable, of being weak, of being at the mercy of evil forces, of being confused and lost. And our life has meaning. And I think in Reclaim Regret, it's a healing of our life's disappointment so that we can discover the meaning of our life.
Right. And I do want to, speaking of Reclaim Regret, we don't want to read the whole book to you, but I would like to just point out a passage in here that I think really applies. It's on page 27, I believe.
Yes.
Do you want to read that, sister?
On page 27, we're 26 and 27, we're talking about patterns in our life. Because as we look back at our regrets can kind of seem like they're all disparate. They're all
right.
These random situations
yeah.
that disconnectedly occurred. Mm-hmm. And random events, you can feel really powerless over, like you have no control.
Because it could happen tomorrow again.
And all these right. other random events could keep on happening.
Exactly.
And life has no meaning in random events.
Correct.
And so one way of beginning to look at connecting things also is by identifying patterns in our life. And this is an exercise by which we can do that. And it starts out with by being present to even a very simple situation that may have happened to you today or yesterday, and it may not be a big thing, but I'm trying to think of one of mine right offhand, but I'll think of one of yours, Jeanette, because we were working together this mm-hmm. morning. But as an example that many people can identify with, I realized that I had not been clear about a project that we were going to be doing, and that's often my mistake. I have temporal lobe epilepsy, so...
But I did not clarify it, so I went off on my own track completely.
So we're on two different tracks, and we have to come together again and kind of straighten out what we're going to do this afternoon. And so inside of myself, I'm going, it just happened again. I'm not clear. I have to, you know, remember what I need to do because of the way, you know, my brain works now. And Jeanette had her own reaction that she was like, oh, no, I'm really sorry. I screwed up.
Yes, I did this all wrong. I'm so sorry. Yeah. This is terrible. Oh, my gosh.
So we both had our different reactions.
Right.
And each of those reactions, if we took them and we said, first of all, what was our immediate feeling? We don't have to go through the whole exercise here. But, you know, stopping at the end of the day, okay, what was my immediate experience, my immediate feeling before I started talking about, oh, I'm sorry about this, or, oh, I did it again. And looking at that, then we can stop and say, 10 years ago, where was I? What was I doing? Who was in my life? What job did I have? And as I look at those experiences, I most likely will find a similar situation. It may not be exactly the same, but there's something there that's similar. So right now we're in 2018, 2008. I can look at and I can say, yep, there it is.
Right.
1998, I can look back.
Surprise, surprise.
What do you know? There we are. Right there again.
Right.
And I can look back at 1988 and I can say, there it was right there again. 1978, 1968, you know, and then you get back 1968, I was five, you know, but you may be getting back to when you were five or three or two or one, and you may not be able to consciously picture or remember an exact event, but oftentimes you might be able to experience like this sense, just this sense within you, because I don't know, it's almost like our cells have memories, our bodies have memories too of those events. So if we actually sat with just the very earliest sense that we have, even if we don't know what it was, that connected to that very simple interchange we had today, and we stayed with that sense for 10 minutes and then handed it over to Jesus, it might get stronger, it might feel really uncomfortable, but then just hand it over to Jesus or to Mary and let it go. You know, if we were to do that, you know, tomorrow and the next day and the next day, even with the same event, we would discover that little by little, those experiences, in this case, where we've had a miscommunication and we're under a deadline and have to get something done quickly, will not trigger the same reactions.
Right.
Because what's happening now is not the issue. What's happening today is triggering this unknown, mysterious, unintegrated stuff somewhere in our past life that's filled our minds with memories and expectations and defenses and everything. But rather than trying to figure all that out, if we simply are present to that little Egypt, that little pain that may not even be our issue, our regret, our fault, we may not even know what it is. That presence will integrate. So patterns is in God's first promise to you in that first section, as we were talking about. We're talking about patterns as a way, in the spirit of Moses, we can talk about it, of going back, of reconnecting to the very roots of what's led us to be where we are today. And in integrating these things within ourselves over and over again, I remember the day, you know, because what's in this book, I little by little, is kind of the fruit of what I found for myself, little by little, and I was doing for myself to begin to heal. And I remember the day that I had this sudden discovery that my future could be different than my past. And it was so, so like marvelous and amazing. And when you feel that, when you discover that, you just want to take off running. But to take off running, you have to have practical things to do. And that's why the book is filled with these very simple practices that you can come back to little by little, over and over, that allow you to run, to run. The founder of our community said, holiness is like this amazing horizon. It's a path you can walk on as far as you desire. There's no end to it. You can go as far as you want or as little as you want. And sometimes we just go a little bit because we don't have the bicycle. We don't have the car. We don't have the rocket ship. We don't have the practical tools, the way of praying, the information to allow us to fly. You know, and this Old Testament talks about flying on eagle's wings, being safe, rising, ascending. And that's in our souls what we all want, is that.
Amen to that, sister. Well, thank you. This is Sister Catherine Hermes, who has written Reclaim Regret. This was number 3 in our podcast series. And thank you so much, Sister Catherine.
Thank you, too, so much. You're wonderful to speak with, Jeanette.
And we will speak to you very soon for our next Reclaim Regret podcast. Thanks for listening.
Would you like to continue this conversation? Join me on my Patreon project called Sister Catherine's Podcast for soul healing meditations, step-by-step guides to freeing your heart, practical guides for spiritual growth, and so much more. Thank you.